and presented by Chafe and Lujan Injury Law Firm, doing good by doing right. Pirates played a matinee today, couldn't sweep the White Sox, close but no cigar. Did cover that run line, 4-3 loser. Top of the lineup, guys came through with a couple hits each. Adam Frazier, Key Brian Hayes, Brian Reynolds keeps it up. Key Brian Hayes now has some record where he's gotten on base. What is it, 27 consecutive times?
Straight. I think that's the most by Pirates rookie since Arky Vaughn.
One of Cook's favorite subjects to write about. Arky Vaughn.
On papyrus.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Those jokes about Cook covering Pirates teams from the 1910s and 20s never get old for me.
You're a pathetic person, you know.
Big
that?
Poison, little poison, pie trainer.
Covered them back when they were, what, the Alleghenies?
Things of that nature. Greg Brown is with us. Greg, do you agree with that? Do you like the Cook jokes about covering old school Pirates teams or no?
I didn't know the jokes existed, to be quite honest with
yeah.
you.
Oh, so yeah. They're plentiful.
It sounds pretty funny to me right now.
I mean, I've taken it to the extreme of saying Ron was there to chronicle the end of the late Cretaceous period, stuff like that.
Yeah,
we
really
just take it to comical extremes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good, clean fun.
Greg's brought to you by Greenewalt Roofing. They're more than great roofs. Greg, my theory on these starting pitching decisions that Derek Shelton is making, got the guys that stay in, the guys who come out of games, is that people want to point the finger at him, and I think it largely comes from the front office. I don't think that he has managerial autonomy. Agree or disagree?
I think he has certainly a part in the decision-making process, but I do believe that and this has been going on before Shelton, but I do believe the front office plays a major role. I mean, Ben Sherrington said the other day, I've never heard this, and I'm not saying this is bad or good, I've never heard anybody say this. They are looking for matchups, in so many words, that they can create, looking to create matchups. I've never heard that before, where they're looking, planning ahead of time to, quote, create matchups. Again, I'm not passing judgment. That's just the way it is these days. In other words, they're looking at the bullpen and seeing, I guess, numbers and the analytics and deciding, okay, we want this guy to face this guy in this inning.
Who's they? So, the manager and the coaches, or like the brainiacs in the front office?
I think the managers, the coaches, and there are a lot of people in the analytics department. So I think it's not just one guy. I think it's it's almost like a team of people that make these decisions.
Man, that sounds like a lot of cooks in the kitchen. It also sounds like paralysis by analysis in a lot of ways, doesn't it?
Well, except that you could say that. On the other hand, you can also point to organizations that have done the same for a number of years and have won because, you know, that they believe in it, mm-hmm. and they win a lot of ball games. So, heck, the Dodgers are doing it now. The Tampa Bay Rays may be the best example. Go back to Oakland for many years. So it's the way of the baseball, and I would say soon the sports world. It's a seismic shift in how things are done.
Greg, I'm more or less on board with that seismic shift, I guess, although what it's turned the games into aesthetically at times, I think, is problematic, and there has to be a balance struck. And I think even some of the people who were on the cutting edge of a lot of the analytics-minded analysis, basically, would agree with that. The thing about specifically Brubaker and when he was pulled out of that game is this, and this is just how I look at it, so I'm wondering if you would share this view. He's a guy that I don't know where or if he would slot in on a really good Pirates team, hypothetically, a couple years down the road if things break their way. Although I think, better chance than not that a guy like Brubaker panning out would help them be good in a couple years. I want to figure out, even if you're trying to create good matchups, and even if the analytics say maybe third time through the lineup you should be looking to do that, I do want to see how JT Brubaker handles a mildly tough, not like a critical, but a tough situation in the later stages of a ball game, because at some point you would think if he's going to develop into the fullest version of himself as a pitcher, he's going to need to be allowed to face those situations. That was my problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, before this year, I thought that for a long time. I've thought that young pitchers at some point, they have to face these situations to see. And then, you know, we talk about learning experiences. You know, I mean, it is a learning experience, whether they succeed or fail. You have to go through that. And I think oftentimes, maybe in the minor leagues, they don't even get that opportunity. So when it comes to the big leagues, that's the chance. Chase DeYoung got that chance today, by the way. Now, he's not a young former prospect, but he is as inexperienced as JT Brubaker. He's had cups of coffee for the previous 3 years, just a couple starts here and there. I think today was his 15th major league start over a four-year stretch. But he was given that chance today, which surprised me. I was stunned that he got to face Jake Lamb. I thought it was good that he got to face Jake Lamb. And then he got past Lamb and he faced Grandal. So he was given that chance. And I imagine Brubaker down the road, the caveat to that is that they are really, I think, very concerned about Brubaker, who had that history of missing almost an entire year with shoulder issues. They are trying to navigate through those waters right now with some of these younger pitchers and guys. And I get that. I mean, that's something that I think we all have to take notice of.
Well, the Cleveland game was a bad application of that, though, because his pitch count was super low. He threw a ton of strikes, and they were largely stress-free games. You weren't asking him to stretch it out to 110 pitch count wise and get you through the eighth inning, Greg. You know what I mean?
Again, I hear you, and so I'm saying it's both. You're right, and I think they're trying to be consistent. I think they're trying to learn. I think they're trying to win. They're trying to get these pitchers experience.
Greg, do you think the pitchers themselves? Sorry to cut you off. Do you think the pitchers themselves, though? The other kind of ramification I would think of is, even if they sort of know the plan going in, I think Brubaker alluded to something along those lines after that game. I would think the competitor in these guys, there's got to be some disappointment in not being able to try from that competitive mindset standpoint to finish your own business. Do you know what I mean?
I hear you. And I said it again today, and not really tongue in cheek, because the modern day sabermetricians, I've heard it, for a number of years now, that things like RBIs are meaningless. Things like wins and losses for pitchers are meaningless. People believe that now. Many, many people, that wins and losses for pitchers are meaningless. That's fine for somebody, outside of the baseball diamond saying that. I find it hard to believe that Chase DeYoung, for example, didn't want to get his first Pirate win today. I think that's why Shelton kept him in, to try and get that third out, and maybe the Pirates would score in the bottom half of the inning. He could get that first win. And I haven't had a chance yet, but I'm certainly going to when the team comes back home. Ask David Bednar if that win was unimportant to him last night.
Well, I think if you asked Ben Cherington, he might say the first thing's right, that wins are meaningless. That would be my guess.
I think that's where it's a very difficult road to negotiate.
He told me
when you're Cherington and others that you try to win, get experience, all this stuff, and we also need to try and satisfy the needs of these pitchers because we are player centric, and so we want them. If indeed Brubaker feels it's important to get the win, they better try and get him a win if they can.
Greg Brown is brought to you by Community Bank, moving forward, building a stronger community. So what is the role of the manager then in 2020, Greg? If he's not pushing the buttons and he doesn't have, the carte blanche and the license to make all these moves, and it's not just him doing it, what's Derek Shelton's job then? Like, what's the primary job description for a manager
these
days?
I think he's still very much involved in the decision-making process. It's not taken out of his hands, so he's very much involved. He's still, ultimately, I still believe it's his decision. That's my, now, until I am proven otherwise, I'll believe that until I see it or hear it from someone in the know. But ultimately, he's given all this information. This is what we'd like. This is what we want. Well, I think they still allow him to have a gut feel as to how they do things on the field once the game does start. This is our game plan. This is what we'd like, but we're going to leave it up to you to ultimately decide when you take a pitcher out, when you pinch hit, who you pinch hit for. And also, a lot of what happens for a major league manager happens before game time. It's knowing when a player needs some time. I've talked to him enough now to know ahead of time. He's told me about a player looking like he's tired. I'm not shared that on the air, But and then I see the guy, you know, gets a day off, and that's him knowing that, you know, this guy needs to get off his feet, and so and knowing when a player feels like, you know, tomorrow or whatever, the next day, going around talking to these guys, having a feel for knowing when they want that day off, whether they look like they need one or not. Maybe they just relate that to him, or whether nobody, I don't want to take a day off. I don't want one now, maybe down the road. Okay, well, we won't, even though we had this plan. All right, I'll let you play tomorrow.
Greg, I wanted to switch gears here briefly away from the Pirates to baseball at large. I'm sure you have taken ample notice of these pitcher checks for sticky substances, sometimes mid-inning, like Girardi checking, requesting the Scherzer check, and all the absurdity that has ensued. Sergio Romo dropped his pants in front of the umpire last night and said, here, you can check everything if you need to. What is your thought and reaction on all of that in this new, you know, kind of paradigm in baseball, and where do you think it's going to go?
Well, I mean, we're 3 days into it throughout Major League Baseball, and we've had two incidents. We've had the Scherzer situation, we had Romo, and that's been it. I mean, from what I've seen in two games in Pittsburgh, it's been nothing. In fact, I've forgotten about it. So, and I think by the end, and we're noticing now, these relievers were barely checked at the foul line. I mean, it's just a glance of the glove. Maybe you take the cap off. And so I think in a couple of weeks, this is my guess now, in a couple of weeks, I don't think we'll have much at all. I think it's going to be almost forgotten. I would think that by the end of July, maybe once past the All-Star break, they'll keep doing it. But it's already quickened up in 2 days where they're barely it's almost like the umpires are apologizing to the pitchers, like, hey, we got to do this real quick. Let me look at that. Okay, yep, your glove, your cap, you're fine. Let's move it along. So I think it's much ado about nothing. Eventually it's going to get back to the point where the managers, if they want to make us think about it, will, like Girardi did. It's kind of pretty much been in the hands of the managers for a long time anyway.
But what if the spin rates start going haywire again, going way up, and the batting averages come back down, Greg?
Yeah, then I think they might look at it again. But if they continue to decrease and the offense increases, I think they'll just kind of go through these routines, these checks at the foul line, mm-hmm. and they'll be brief, and until it becomes prevalent. I don't think it will. I mean, I think if they're doing it, they're hiding it, finding better ways to hide it. And so I just don't think it's going to be that big a deal. I thought it could be. I really thought it might be a circus.
Yep.
But other than what's happened with Scherzer, and that was instigated by Girardi.
Yes, it was.
The only circus atmosphere that I've seen anyway has been the Romo one from last night.
Greg, I know that no one in the organization has told you who they're going to pick, and if they did, they've sworn you to secrecy, and I know how much you like Mueller, but there's no way you're going to tell us on live radio what they're going to do a month from now, or less than a month from now, for the draft. But I am wondering if you know who has the most say in the pick, because I'm confused. Like, is it this Steve Sanders guy that you interviewed a couple of weeks ago? Is it Delacari, who's still a holdover from the Huntington regime? I mean, Charrington's not, it's not like football where you've got Kevin Colbert, the GM, at every pro day and every draft thing, and then ultimately the GM makes the call. I've heard that the amateur scouting director used to be the guy that basically makes the pick for the Pirates. So what's your understanding of how things work right now with the Pirates in the draft, Greg?
Well, I think it's a little bit different when you have the overall pick. So you don't have to wait for other teams to make their selection. So they will know. They'll all have come to a consensus. Charrington, Delacari, Sanders, all of them will have come to a consensus as to who they should pick number one. Now, as you get down in later rounds and other guys are picked, that's when I think it probably goes on Delacari's shoulders with the input leading up to the draft from everyone. But ultimately, aside from pick number one, and that's a pick they're all going to know. There's not going to be any. The debate is happening now. And up until the day before the draft.
Ben in Omaha right now? Do we know that? Is he there?
I don't know that for a fact. I do not know where Ben is located at the moment.
Man, you'd think if he wanted one of the guys playing in that World Series, he'd be there, no?
Oh, no, I don't think that has anything to do with it. No.
So you don't think you'd actually have to see the guy in person?
Yeah, with a Bobby Valentine disguise on in case he didn't want to tip his hand too much.
Yeah, that'd be hilarious. See him out there, out beyond the right field.
But they don't have pro days like they do in college football. So how would he get up close with these guys, Leiter and Kumar Rocker and those guys, Chris?
No, I'm in agreement with you. I just had to get the Bobby Valentine joke out there. But
yeah, I don't think he needs to be in Omaha to know whether. I mean, that stuff again. I mean, that all that work has been done. I mean, this has not just happened in the past month. They know Rocker. They know Leiter. They know the high school shortstops. They know the college catcher.
Greg, do you have a preference? Just as a fan, not like speaking as the guy who's you know doing play by play in the games. But when you look at drafts, do you have a preference versus, like, say, a college player, maybe a college pitcher, or a high school position guy where it seems like it's more you sort of know what you're getting with the college guy versus this projectable upside in a high school player?
Yeah, I mean, for me, as a fan, I want a college pitcher. I want either Leiter or Rocker as a fan. Just because of what I saw of, like, Cole, and I saw the electricity a short time after the draft. I know that we'll have to wait longer for the others to arrive, whereas a college pitcher is going to get to the big leagues quicker. Now, is he going to make the question the Pirates have in front of them is that college pitcher going to have the impact that a high school shortstop?
Well, Andrew McCutchen as a high school guy that was projectable became the face of the franchise for close to a decade at this point.
That's right. So you could have if Rocker and Leiter, either one is picked. Looks great now, and you know, last year I'm thinking, oh, this is the top of the rotation guy in a year. Well, that's silly because now in a couple years we find out as he goes through, he's a really good pitcher, but he's probably a two or a three, maybe he is a number one. But a high school player, you're talking, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road before he makes an impact in the big league. Mm-hmm. So it's again, the fan in me wants Rocker or Leiter. Because I like thinking that he'll be here in heck, who knows, maybe next year. But in reality, I know that I've got to be more patient and certainly rely on the people in the know.
All right, Greg, great stuff. Are you going to St. Louis or are you going to watch the games back here?
Not yet. We're not there yet. I'm going to be back here and hoping we're going to start traveling the radio teams, I think, after the reopening weekend, 4th of July weekend, and then we're going to start traveling radio teams. So I think radio will travel after this from this point on, and TV, we're still hoping at some point this season.
Gotcha. All right, Greg, thank you.
Thanks, guys.